We're discussing today about the halachas of mar, something bitter, and charif, something sharp. And the reason why I wanted to discuss this, it came up, I heard recently a shiur from Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss was saying, when it came to using chrein for marer, so he felt that chrein is something sharp, not something bitter. And for marer, you have to use something that's bitter, not sharp. So we'll see, at the end, a lot of poskim say that one should not cut the chrein, you should have them whole, this way it keeps its sharpness. Rav Asher Weiss paskin that one should dafka cut them and leave them open so it loses its sharpness and potency, and then after it loses that sharpness, then it's actually bitter. The actual food is bitter, and that way you'll be mekayim the halachas of mar. So in light of that, I wanted to discuss through this sugya of olives, how there's such a discussion of sharpness versus bitterness, and I don't think that the poskim are mechalic between bitterness and sharpness. Sharpness is how we use in English, and Hebrew also, but still even something bitter can qualify as something sharp. And something sharp can qualify as something bitter. So that's the discussion I'd like to go through today. So let's go through the Gemara. You look at the Gemara at the top of Mem Aleph Amin Aleph, the two dots. The Gemara is talking about a situation. Let's say a person sitting at the table and there are various foods in front of him. So what bracha do you say? What are the order of brachos? So the Gemara says, Amar Ula. Ula says, Machlokes Mishiver Chosein Shavos. When the brachas are of equal, you have an apple, let's say, and an orange, or an apple, I should say, and a pomegranate. So, which bracha do you say first? Do you say bracha, I like the apple more than the pomegranate?
They're not equal. You said apple and they're equal, say not bracha. Apple and orange.
No, they're equal bracha.
The pomegranate is one of the species.
It is, but the bracha rishona is the same. Bracha achrona is different, but bracha rishona is the same. So, I prefer the apple, but the pomegranate is one of the shiva saminim, like you said. But the bracha rishona is exactly the same. It's bori priya etz. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda from the Mishnah says, you go based on min shiva adif, that the shiva saminim always takes precedence to a non-shiva saminim. Okay, that's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. But Rabbanan holds, savri min chaviv adif, the food item that I enjoy comes first. So since I like the apple comes before the pomegranate. So that's the machlokas that appears in the Mishnah. Aval says, the Gemara, when the brachas are not equal, let's say I have an apple and a tomato, one to eat, one to adama. So then,
when the bracha rishona is different,
exactly. We're talking about bracha, exactly.
Because before the bracha rishona was the same.
Exactly. So now the Gemara says
was different, and it's not so pashat that the achrona affects the
correct. So the Gemara says, so when the brachas rishonos are different, so then you say one bracha. Separately, one bracha here, one bracha there, adama and ha'etz, any order, it's all okay. Only when it comes to being the same bracha, hava'etz, I have to make a decision. Would I enjoy more, or minashiva? But once there are different brachas, so there's a tomato and then there's an apple, it doesn't make a difference to the order that I do. That's the Gemara's initial understanding. So then the Gemara brings a question, meisive, how you lefanav tznon v'zayis, you have in front of you a radish, and you have in front of you an olive. Mivarach al tznon upotes hazayis. You say bracha on a radish, and then that exempts the olive. You say an adama on a radish. My son just came home, I don't know sure why, but he came home with one of those plants, but he's, you know, you put by the windowsill in the kitchen and you water and let the sun get to it. He brought home a radish. I don't know, that's what they sent him home with. So the radish will be growing in our house over the next few days. So you say adama on the tznon on the radish, and you don't need to say bracha when you have the olive afterwards. So it doesn't make any sense. We said if there are two different brachas, so one doesn't exempt the other one. You need to say ha'etz on the olive, separate from the adama on the radish. So the Gemara said, no, this case is different. Hacha b'mayaskinan kishatznon ikr. I'm eating the radish, that's ikr part. So the ikr is exempting the tafel.
That was a brisa. Quoted a brisa or something?
This was not a brisa, but we've seen this in the past about ikr and tafel. I'm not sure the brisa is quoted here. But if you look at Rashi now, this is the important part. We're not going to appreciate the importance of it just yet. If you look at Rashi where it says, Shehayatznon Iker, the radish is really the most important one. So it says Rashi, Shebishvilo Hischil Achila. The reason why I started to eat my meal is because I wanted the radish. Velo Achal Zayis Ela Lehapig Chorfel Shetznon. I only ate the olive in order to neutralize the sharpness of the radish. The radish is very sharp if you have them when they're not cooked. You have it raw, it's sharp. So I have the olive simply to neutralize the sharpness. The only reason why I'm eating the zayis is simply to help me take in the radish. But not because I want the zayis, simply because I want to remove that sharpness in my mouth. V'tanan, not me, this is what you're referring to. The Mishnah says, kol shu ikar v'imo tefela. If I'm eating something that's primary, I have something that's secondary to it, mevarach al ikar upotes atfela. I say bracha on the ikar, which in this case is the radish, and that exempts me from having to say bracha on the alf. Okay, fine. So let's keep this Rashi in the back of our minds, and let's go through the sugya of Davar Charif. Davar Charif.
That was really an intro, right?
Intro, right. We're going to come back and appreciate this Rashi towards the end, Mir Tashem. But now we're going to go off on a tangent about Davar Charif. We just saw Tznon, a radish, is the primary example what they use in the Gemara all over about Davar Charif. Davar Charif is something sharp, and there are many halachas that are affected by Davar Charif, in particular the world of Bas B'chalf, and all Easterim of cutting with knives. So let's go through some of these halachas. You guys went through this already. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us, in Simin Tzadi Vav. I know this is a new area for you, for many of you, but it's good to be exposed to these issues. So the Shulchan Aruch says, let's read to the Shulchan Aruch. Tznon o silka shechatcham besakin. A radish, I forget what a silka is. Maybe some type of cabbage. I remember, I'm not sure. Let's assume a sharp type of cabbage that you cut with a knife of shabasar ben yom. And these shalas, by the way, come up pretty often.
We use it on Rosh Hashanah, the Iraqi. We use the Iraqi. The silka, because it sounds like something.
But anyway,
go ahead.
It's
beets, no?
It could be beets. Some beets, actually, I think you're right. Beets. I always get confused. You're right, beets. So these shalas come up pretty often. So I have a basar, a meat knife that was ben yomu. Ben yomu means it was used within the past 24 hours. I go ahead and cut my radish, I cut my beets, or I cut my olive, which is the most likely circumstance. You cut your onions, rather. You cut your onions with a meat knife. So what's the status of this onion? Shenim makunach. So if the knife wasn't clean, it had a piece of meat, so asr lachem b'chalav, because now there's pieces of meat in my onion. And I certainly cannot eat this onion now with milk. Ad she told me makum achatach, until I scrape away the part that was cut, kedei netzias makum. So the pieces of meat are not going to penetrate into the entire olive, just whatever pieces are on the outside, which I can't really get unless I scrape it off. So if I scrape down the area that was cut of the onion, I can now use this onion with milk. Shuk over etzba. Now, how deep I need to cut is the thickness of a finger. Oh, what I could also do is shitamenu. If I taste the onion below yeh botam baser, if I don't taste any meat, so then I could also assess that. Oh, there's no tam that I lick it. I don't taste any meat. That would also tell me that there's no other meat. I don't have to scrape any further. Shaz muter b'hadacha. Then all I have to do is wash it off. Now we don't really know how to do this. Our taste buds are not so sensitive to lick a piece of onion and say, oh, there's no meat in there. We're all probably going to say in all state cases there's probably no meat, but we're not so sensitive. So ignore that part. But in theory, a person is skilled to taste it, and he doesn't taste any meat on the outside, just wash it off, and that's also another way you could use the onion.
Now, this, but after cutting, it's assuming you cut it.
After you cut it.
It's a question on the amount to cut.
Or
you could do it no cutting and just washing.
The second part is no cutting at all, just simply washing it down. If you taste it and you taste no meat, you wash it down would be enough. If you taste the meat, would you be fleshig? From the time alone, I wonder.
I thought someone's, like, if you taste a sauce from a meat.
Right.
Then, like, you decide, oh, I'm not having the meat. I once heard you fleshig.
Right. It's possible you are. This case is different.
Right. It's less, but.
Yeah, this is less, yeah. It's possible. I'm not much sure. Fine. The Yeshomim says, the Shulchan Aruch, Tu Adin Leino, Ben Yomo, Vuhu Makunach. The same halach applies. If it's not ben yomo, if it's an old knife, and normally the halach is something that's not ben yomo, it loses its potency. There's no tam there anymore. It doesn't make anything usser. Still, the onion has the ability.
Is it a dirty knife?
No, it's a mekunach, means it's clean. So it's an old knife that it's clean, it's my fleshik jaw, but I haven't used it in the past 24 hours. That halach will apply also. Okay.
What, the taste one? Cutting it off?
You have to still cut it off in that case. Because the taste that's in the knife will be extracted by when you cut something sharp, a davar charif, with cutting a knife, the duch, the tzakina, the pressure of the knife, and the sharpness of the onion, that comes together, it allows the tam, the old taste in the knife to come out and be good again.
This is a clean?
Yes, a clean knife.
Non-ben yoma. With a sharp object?
Correct. That's the chiddush. That's the chiddush of a davar charif. The davar charif has the ability to extract the old taste that's in the knife.
Not a ben yom.
Exactly. That's the ability.
Even if it's clean.
Even if it's clean, exactly. That's the ability of davar charef. This happens all the time. So now my onion now is fleisher.
How long is that?
For whenever. There's no time limit. If it's an old, no matter how old it is, even though it's clean, if I cut an onion with a meat knife or a milchuk knife,
it's
it
like
will become
thing.
That thing. Yeah, yeah. So that's the halacha. Now, the ability of davar charef is able to affect the different halachas. I don't want to go through all the different shachs here, but either way, this is the chiddush of a davar charef. Now we have to know what's considered davar charef. Then it's
then
very, very important.
In your mouth, though, if there's a food like that that cleans out your mouth, and all of a sudden it extracts old food or something like that, that's never an issue, right?
Correct. Okay, so this is the basic halacha of davar charef. So now we have to know what's considered davar charef. Well, an onion is a garlic. And there's a long list of different things. Machlok is what qualifies for many of the items. But the question we want to focus on now is an olive considered a davar charef? So,
or a mar, or is it a difference?
So we're going to go through exactly.
Is that all the same question?
Yeah, exactly. So let's first focus on davar charef, and then we're going to come to mar as well. So in terms of davar charef, by an olive, so there's a shach, which writes in Sifkat and Chaf, not in front of you though. Actually, before the shach, let's go to the Shulchan Aruch, the next one. Go to the next page. Shulchan Aruch, Simen Tef Mem Zayin. The next page is Shulchan Aruch there towards the top. Second one down. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Zay Simshin is Haru Lachatcham, Lach, Lachatcham rather, Bisakin, Chadasha. Olives, that one was careful to cut them with a new knife. Afilu lo nizharu lechavsham b'kedeir chadasha. Even if you weren't careful about pickling it, soaking it in a parv container, eno bas yomo mutaris lecholyama. So what the Shulchan Aruch says is that if you want the olive to remain parv, you have to cut it with a new knife, a sakin chadasha, a new knife. Because if you use an old knife, whether it be a meat knife or whether it be a milchuk knife, then olive is going to become that item. Okay. That's the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch seems to indicate, since you have to be very careful which knife you're using for an olive, seems to imply that an olive is considered a davar charef. Because had you not been careful which knife, then the olive's ability of a charifus, the sharpness of the olive, will make that olive into whatever status the knife is. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah has. It's not in front of you. I made a mistake in the Mamre Kamos. So says the
That wasn't related, right?
Correct. I wrote the wrong one down.
Because we're reading that, we kept going back and forth.
Right.
Is that related?
Okay. So my mistake.
No, that's good. Okay. We catch
fine.
It.
Okay, good. So the Mishnah Berurah says, that's why you guys were on board.
We're a little confused.
So Mishnah Berurah writes, if the knife that was cut with a knife, rather the knife that was used to cut the olives, or whether it comes to onions or radish, if it's an old knife, and even if the knife is clean, so we're talking about right now, this is Hilchos Pesach, Simen Taf Mem Zayin. So our concern here is not Bas B'chalav, our concern is Chametz. So if I have a used knife that I use all year long, and I begin to cut my olives with it, even though the knife is clean, and even though the knife hasn't been used in 24 hours, I didn't kasher the knife at all. So when I cut this olive, the sharpness of the olive is going to extract the old taste of Chametz, and now this olive is Chametz, I can't use it anymore. So that's the halacha.
But there's, on Pesach, it's Mashahu. Is Mashahu a Darabanim or Daraisa?
It's a good point. Not for now, right now. It's a discussion.
That's what we're discussing, though.
It's a good
was
point.
Was that this one?
It's a good point, but listen, what the Shulchan Aruch tells us, we don't really care about the Kol Shu at all. Once you cut the Davar Charef,
Kol Shu the same as Mashahu?
Yeah. When you start cutting the knife in the onion, in the olive, the entire olive becomes a Chametz, becomes milk, becomes meat. Not just the culture, the tam penetrates the entire item. And this olive is now full of chametz within the olive. And says the Mishmur, why? Because kevan de davar charefu. Since the olive qualifies as a sharp item, it therefore, when you cut it with a knife, it extracts all the tastes that are in the knife. That's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch here, that olives are considered davar charef.
If you yada yada your kalim, you heat them up or use it, what are they called? When you change them for Passover to...
You're kashering them?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that they're used,
mm-hmm.
however
yeah.
that works.
Kibbalah kach polta, right?
Then have you now eliminated
yes.
this problem?
Yes, 100%. Whenever you kasher kalim the proper way, it no longer has any old taste. It's completely new and fresh.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So then the Mishnah Berurah writes, now this is all true with cutting olives. If you cut them before you've pickled olives, that's when it's sharp.
So you asked the question, Morty asked that question. He goes, is that indefinite that that thing is always going to absorb?
Correct, unless you kosher.
Unless you kosher is the answer, right?
Mm-hmm. So now the Mishnah Berurah qualifies and says that olives are only considered sharp only when you cut them prior to pickling them, it's still within its sharpness, or even after you've pickled them, and it's taken time, it's still considered something sharp. But let's say you've placed it in water first, and then you've pickled them, it loses its sharpness, and then if you cut olives, it wouldn't be a problem. So you have to figure out when exactly does it still retain its sharpness. Again, olives in its raw state, olives even pickled, still are considered sharp. Olive soaked in water first loses its sharpness, and then cutting olives wouldn't be a problem.
It's funny. I thought the sharpness was in cahoots with the pickling. It's not.
It's not. Apparently, again, I don't eat olives raw, pickled. I don't know anything about olives. I know. I don't taste them. I don't know. But apparently, even raw, the halacha assumes that it's considered sharp, according to the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach comes along, and the Shach argues.
Soaking in water.
Soaking in water removes the taste. Now, the Shach comes along and writes, he's not so sure, and he thinks maybe olives do not qualify as something sharp. Okay, it's hard to explain that. The argument with Tzias, again, I don't know how to weigh my own opinion in whether olives are considered sharp or not, but that's a debate, whether it's considered sharp.
But vinegar is not considered sharp? You just told me if you drain out the sharpness of an olive with water, and then you use vinegar on it, then it's no longer drawing it out. I thought vinegar was on the same level as onions or garlic or...
No, but these things are not... Again, I don't know how it works exactly, but I guess since the olive loses its potency, by putting vinegar back in, it's not going to give it a new flavor.
I'm saying vinegar because itself is not in this category.
Well, vinegar itself, you don't cut vinegar. It's only when you cut food.
No, I'm saying that draws out the sharpness. I thought vinegar was potent and it did something to
it. You know, the idea of that
only
with a knife, because the knife, the idea is the pressure with a knife. Plus, the sharpness comes together. Vinegar might have the sharpness, but doesn't have the pressure that's needed also for this combination. Okay, so either way, this machlok is whether olives are sharp. According to the Shulchan Aruch, it is sharp. And according to the Shach, it's not sharp. So it comes along, the Nod Bihuda. The Nod Bihuda writes in one of his Svarim called Darish Lutzion. He says, if you look in the Tosfos says differently. So look at the Tosfos in the bottom of this page. This is a Tosfos that appears in Masech Pesachim. Now we're jumping to something davar mar, something bitter, which we said in the beginning, well, bitter and sharp are two different things. So look what Tosfos writes in the bottom of Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. He writes, Mamma or Shein Bikurim. So Gemara is trying to figure out which types of species of vegetables can qualify for mar.
So when you're saying the Shach says it's not
not sharp,
Harif, he's saying it's mar.
No, not yet. We haven't gotten that yet, but we're going to a different topic, and we're going to connect everything in just a moment. So with regards to the halachas of maror, we know that radish, the chrein, and lettuce are not the only ones. There's a whole list of what can be used for maror. So in trying to figure out what's on this list, the Tosfos writes, V'lekel emeimar maror hainu zayas. You can say that maror is zayas, or that olive qualifies for maror. Shumar, because olive is mar. Kedarshinan, like the Gemara says, Hinei Allah Zayis Tarf Befia, Amr Yona. So what happened is when the Yona said, when she got the olive tree, the olive branch in the mouth by Noach, she says, Yehei Mizonasai Mirorim Kizayis. She says, I rather my food, my source of food, be bitter like olives and be self sufficient to find my own food out in the wild than have sweet food being given by people. It seems that part of this discussion, and maybe the dove was presented with the opportunity of, if you want to, a yona, you could be fed by animal people, and people will give you delicious food, challah and cakes. And the yona's response was, I'd rather be self-sufficient and have something bitter than have something sweet and rely on people. But in the statement of this medrash, this Gemara, it says, I want my food to be marah, like kizayis, like an olive. So maybe an olive does qualify as marah. So the Gemara says, Amar marah, dumya dematza ma matza, Minzram afmar chen. So firstly, it says Tosfos can't be true. Because mar has to be, zram has to be something that grows from the ground, like a vegetable, or like a seed. That's like matzah is from grain that grow from the ground. So to olive has to be from the ground. But olives grow in a tree. It's not considered al-dama, they're considered eitz. So for that reason, he says that olives doesn't qualify. But the ode says Tosfos
doesn't qualify as
mar. You need, the mar has to be vegetables, zraim seeds. But another reason he writes that the reason why zayis can't be used for mar is because od shezayis ha'ilan mar v'lo ha'pri. The tree itself, the branch itself of an olive tree is bitter, but the fruit, the olive, is not bitter. Kedemashma ola zayis. He said he had an olive branch in his mouth. He said, I'd rather an olive branch, but not an olive. That's a dik. Ola zayis, the branch, the leaf. So that's the dik that Tosos writes. And he brings another rai, Amrinu Nami, the Mechilta tells us, Vayoreu Hashem eitz zehu zayis shein mar bilanos kezayis. So when he threw in the wood, when the bitter water, Moshe Rabbeinu threw in the branch into the water, it made everything sweet. So what was the branch that was used? It was an eitz of the zayis. He didn't throw an actual fruit, an olive in. He threw an eitz zayis, the branch of the olive tree was the bitter tree that was thrown into the bitter waters, which ended up miraculously making it sweet. So he's medayik from two places that the pre itself, the olive, is not bitter.
It's the branch.
Rather, it's the branch. Okay. So now, Nodi Yehuda is suggesting here, he's making a jump. He's saying, just like this Tosfos says that olives are not bitter, it also means olives are not sharp either. And it's not considered davar charef. So now we know in tastes, in the way the taste buds work, so there's one part of the tongue that's bitter. They're sweet, they're salty, and then they're sour. So I'm not sure where sharpness fits in. How do you define sharpness? Is not one of the four tastes that we were taught. So there's bitter. So olives are not bitter. So if they're not bitter,
what are the four tastes we taught?
Sweet, sour, salty, and bitter. You used to do these tests in school. You put it in different parts of the tongue and you taste it.
As opposed to?
Sharpness.
Okay.
Sharpness is not one of the tastes. Sharpness is just the strength of something.
Sweet, salty, go ahead. Bitter?
Bitter. And which one are you missing? Sweet, sour? Sour you're missing.
And sour. And what we're talking about, mar, which
bitter?
Mar is bitter.
Bitter. And charifas, which is sharpness, which is not one of the four, though.
Charif.
Charif isn't about a type of taste. It's just strength of something. In theory, you could have a sharp sweet taste, a sharp salty taste, it's about magnitude, to my understanding. Sharpness is about magnitude. So we see from here that the Nodi Yehuda said you could see a raya from Tosfos, if it's not bitter, then it can't be sharp. Sharp, to my understanding, sharp would probably be, I can't imagine you could have sweet ever being sharp. You could have salty being sharp, you could have sour being sharp, and you could have bitter being sharp. That's how I understand this. But Nodi Yehuda, either way, he equates bitterness with sharpness. Okay, fine. We're going to bring this back to Gemara and then what we discussed in the beginning with Rosh HaWais in just a moment. So now the Gemara says that what many of the Achronim ask the following question. So right now we have a debate whether olives are sharp and bitter or are they not sharp and bitter. So the Achronim ask the following question. If you look at our Gemara that we discussed in the beginning, it says, if I have a radish and I have an olive, I say a bracha. Which bracha do I say? I'm having a radish and an olive. I say bracha on the tznon. What bracha do you say in the tznon? What bracha do you say in a radish? An adama.
If you have a radish and an olive?
Right, the Gemara Paskins, you say a adama on the tznon, you say an adama on the radish, and that's going to exempt the olive. Now, I want to look... So Rashi explains why is it ikr and tafel. So let's look at the Rashi again, and now we're going to appreciate this Rashi even more.
Take away that bitterness.
Exactly. That's the key. So let's see. We'll see in a second. Let's read this Rashi again. So Rashi says, Shayatznon ikr, the radish is the ikr. Shebishvilo hitzchila achila, because the radish I wanted to start eating, that's why I started taking a bite of the radish, but that's what I really wanted. I didn't really care for the olive. Vilo achal azayis elahapig lachorfil. Shatznon, I only the olive in order to neutralize and to weaken the sharp taste in my mouth of the tznon. Tavle zayis tafel, the zayis there, zayis is therefore tafel. So that's why I don't say a bracha on the zayis, because it's secondary to the tznon. What's the implication of this Rashi? That a zayis is not sharp. If a zayis is sharp, why would I eat a radish that's sharp and then eat another olive that's sharp? It's not going to help with the problem. They're both sharp. So LMI must be that an olive is considered sweet. And that's how it's able to remove and reduce the amount of sharpness. That's the question a number of the Achronim ask. So this seems to support the Nodi Yehuda and the Tosfos, that olives are not bitter, olives are not sharp. And this goes against what Shulchan Aruch writes, that he thinks that it is sharp. That's the question.
So it was not a tuffle because of quantity?
It's nothing to do with quantity at all. You're eating it just like the halacha is. Let's say I'm eating, I take a nice shot of something, very powerful schnapps. And there's a cracker there. I want to just to help it go down a little bit better. As I eat the cracker afterward, just to reduce the sharpness in my mouth, I don't have to say brach on that cracker. It's completely tafel, because I'm just having it to remove and neutralize the sharpness in my mouth.
And they say the best way to get rid of harif is to eat bread.
Correct.
But you do need to make a bracha on the bread.
You do need to bracha. So that's part of the discussion. You may not have to. Again, another topic, but you may not have to. And by the way, you know the real best way to get rid of something that's sharp? They say, anyone know? Milk. Drinking milk. The worst thing to do is have water. Water makes it worse.
Washes it around.
Right. Milk is the best thing.
We said bread on our cooking shows many years ago.
Yeah, so bread helps, but supposedly milk, if you read the, I read recently a couple places, milk has the ability to remove sharpness right away. Whatever enzymes, whatever it has, chemicals in it, I don't know.
So what does Shach say about it? Doesn't Shach say that it's not possible for Ben Yomo? If it was Ben Yomo, then it's a problem?
Yeah, Ben Yomo is certainly a problem.
With an olive?
With anything, exactly. If I have a meat knife that was used recently and I cut it, that's going to be a problem. But if it's an Eina Ben Yomo, so then a sharp food, such as an olive, at least according to the Shulchan Aruch.
He's also in that same as Tosfos.
No, he argues because Shulchan Aruch, right? Were you looking at Shach or Shulchan Aruch?
Shulchan Aruch.
Right, so Shulchan Aruch says these olives are considered sharp. And only if I cut them with a new knife, only the Sakan Chadashi writes, are the olives allowed to be used on Pesach Hatov. But if I use an old knife, he implies, then an old knife will be a problem and make the olive chametz, because the olive is sharp enough to draw out the taste. So he thinks olives are considered sharp. But this Gemara says, the Rashi says, that's not considered sharp. Olives are actually sweet. That's their lahafig, to neutralize the taste of the sharpness.
Where is this all coming from? What is the source of the fact that a sharp thing and a knife thing together is going to affect?
The Gemara's in Chulin. The Gemara's in Chulin about this. There's no pasuk that says this. It's based on the Gemara's and how they understood taste works.
Taste or kashrus?
Both. Both of them. Okay. So let's go a little bit further.
What's the category of Chulin again?
Yoredeia.
What is that?
Yoredeia?
What is Yoredeia and Chulin?
Chulin is the Gemara. Yoredeia is the name of the Shulchan Aruch that talks about all these halachas.
No, the Gemara. The Gemara is Chulin?
The Gemara is called Chulin, yeah.
And what does that mean? What's in there? Pesachim, Shabbos.
Yeah.
What's Chulin?
Well, let's talk about it afterwards. Let's go weiter, and we'll talk about that afterwards. Fine. So either way, how do we deal with the Shiloh, though? We're dealing with, right now, the Rashi says that olives are considered sweet. But the Shulchan Aruch paskins, that's really considered sharp. So a couple answers that are given. One suggestion is, remember we saw in Mishnah Berurah, that if you soak olives in water, that actually becomes sweet. So what Rashi is talking about here, our Gemara here, when I eat the radish that's sharp, and I eat the olive afterwards as the chaser, if you will, that's talking about an olive that's already sweet, that it's been soaked in water. But the cases that the Shulchan Aruch is talking about, where the olives are sharp, that's when it's still and it's fresh, when it's still raw, hasn't been soaked at all.
Who said this?
That's quoting the name of the Sefer Yeshua, and I saw quoted in the back here.
So that's the answer to the question.
That's the answer to the question, exactly. So really, that, olives are
that,
sharp.
That Rashi was based on a diluted olive, but it was soaked in water.
Exactly. So again, I don't know how olives taste when they're natural. I don't know if they're soaked in water at all. I don't know how sharp they are, but that's a suggestion that he made. Another suggestion was brought down in the Sefer called Chavalim Ben Iman. I don't know who wrote the Sefer. I see it in the back here, the Masifta. He suggests as follows. The different levels of sharpness. We said sharpness is magnitude. How strong is the sourness? How strong is the bitterness? How strong is the saltiness? So just because olives might be sharp, it might not be as sharp as a radish. So if I'm having a really sharp radish, relative to that, the olive might be considered something sweet and would neutralize some of that flavor. So even though inherently, yes, an olive is considered sharp, there are different levels and different grades. So olive is lower down in terms of the magnitude of sharpness. So it will be lahafig the taste, but no one said that's considered sweet still. It's still considered sharp. And therefore, this also deals with the shayla that Rashi says it does neutralize the sharpness. But when it comes to halachas of Yoredeia, it's considered sharp enough to be able to extract the tam that's embedded within these old knives. Okay, very, very interesting. Now, let's go back to what we started off in the beginning. I'll just review with you guys for a moment a halacha. The reason why I got excited about doing the sugya, seems like a very random sugya. I just want to make one point about methodologically how to learn different types of sugyas. It's important to know, remember when I was younger, going to different shirim, I was trying to figure out different styles of learning. So there are very different styles. So some styles of learning are very halachic based. So I have the Gemara, the Rishonim, we go to the Shulchan Aruch and Mishibura. Some types of shirim are very lumdish, trying to figure out the nekudas of machlokas. What are they arguing about? What's the conceptual machlokas here? How to categorize chefza versus gavra. So those are different styles of shir, but there are also different styles of shir that when you learn a Gemara like this, in Gemara Brachos, for the most part, we've been learning just following the Rishonim on the page, and usually the Rishonim are going to talk about the main sugi at hand. Now, once in a while, you're going to find like a random Gemara, random Rashi, which no one else talks about here. But somehow the post can be able to draw out the entire shir from a Rashi. So this sugi here is not really a sugi. If you're learning Brachos, no one would typically learn about Mar and Harifas when you learn the sugya, because the Gemara doesn't talk about this. There's a random Rashi here that makes note of this, and the poskim are drawing out from this Rashi for an entire different topic. So remember when I used to, I was in the YU's Katz Kola. YU's Katz Kola, it's when you're in Smicha, you learn in the afternoons in the Katz Kola, Rav Shechter's Kola. So he'd give these bichinas. When you learn 8 blot, in every 8 blot, you had to get tested. And remember the first time I took the test, he was asking these questions, I had no idea what he was talking about. That wasn't the Gemara that I learned. I didn't understand. I learned so well. I learned the Be'in, and I did terrible on the test. So then I realized
the test was on Brachos?
No, whatever we learned. No, it was Gemara, 8 blot of Gemara at a time. Whatever Gemara, we did Chulin 1 year, we did Bava Kamma 1 year. So whatever we were learning, every 8 blot, we get Bechinas. There are 4 Bechinas throughout the year. And I didn't understand why I was doing so bad on the test. These questions were completely random. They weren't what the Sugyas were of the Gemara. So then I got into Rav Shechter's head, and I realized that he knows everyone can learn the sugyas, because that's what the Gemara is talking about. We learn the sugyas. He wants to know, are you able to figure out when there's a subtle Rashi, a point of Rashi, that's addressing a sugya elsewhere that nobody relates to, are you able to pick up on the importance of that Rashi? So the way I would study afterwards, I learned the Gemaras for the few weeks very, very well. When it came to studying for the Bechina, I wouldn't learn the Gemara as well. I wouldn't chazer. I look in Rashis, and wherever Rashi would quote a Gemara from elsewhere, that means that was an important Rashi. Why is Rashi bringing a Gemara from elsewhere? There's some relevance there. And that's what I figured out, and I started doing well on the tests. So sometimes when you learn Rashi's, you have to try to figure out. Now, you need, of course, a broader picture of Shas and Poskim, but you have to sometimes be able to appreciate, even though the sugya's here, exactly how this might relate to another sugya. So, for example,
Tosfos actually usually brings them all up.
Exactly. Right? So usually, if you follow Tosfos' lead, you'll get there. But sometimes there are cases where the Rishonim here don't talk about a sugya. I'll give you an example. So Rav Shechter always likes to ask halachic shilas from a gadata. Sometimes when we learn through like Sanhedrin.
Nice.
So there was sometimes a gadata.
Not so, supposed to ignore
right,
those.
Right, so there's a whole discussion whether you're allowed to learn halacha from a gadata or not, but he thought that you're allowed to learn halacha from a gadata. So there's a case at the end of one of the prakim in Sanhedrin that we were learning where Rabbi Eliezer was placed in excommunication. He's placed in chayim. The whole fight with Rabbi Eliezer versus Rabbi Yeshua, what to do, lo b'shemayim hi, a whole fight, a whole discussion in the Gemara B'Mitzir. He's placed in Cherem. And then one time, the Gemara Sanhedrin says that his Talmidim came to visit him, and they found that Rabbi Eliezer was wearing tefillin. And that was the Gemara, and it goes on to have all this very subtle point in the Gemara. And he goes on to talk. So Rav Shechter asked the question, and remember, this is 8 blot of Gemara, and you're focusing on the big sugyas.
Yeah.
So he asked the question,
about the tefillin.
He asked the question, how do you know that a menuda is another word for a person who's excommunicated, what proof is there from this Gemara that you're allowed to, the menuda is allowed to wear tefillin? So you're like, it's not open book, you're trying to go through everything in your head, you have no idea what's going on here. So apparently there's a Gemara in Moed Katam that says a menuda asks the question, could a menuda wear tefillin or not wear tefillin? When he's placed in excommunication, is he allowed to? And the Gemara ends in a teku. So Tosfos in Moed Katan says, well, you see from the Gemara in Sanhedrin that Rabbi Elazar was wearing tefillin and he was a menuda. That answers the question here. Now, if you were holding in the Gemara in Moed Katan and you're holding in the Tosfos, then you would know this answered. But so you're not always focused on that. So this is a prime example of the Rashi, very, very unassuming Rashi. Read the Gemara, but you see what a great impact it has that the Acharim discuss that it actually concluded that it's not something sharp.
So why is it teku over there?
How do you know to go to the
exactly? No, so you don't know. So you don't always know these things.
Yes, there's an answer over there.
Right, so you don't always know these things. That's why it's, I didn't know this either until I saw the back of the Masifta talk about this. So the Masifta is a great tool. Right, so that helped me bring this to that point. And then I remembered another thing, which I'll get to in a second, and of the Maisa Nisim. But as the more you learn, then you have to be more sensitive to these things. Rav Shechter always says, he says many times that when he was younger, he used to like to test himself after he learned Yardei very well, go through Tshuva's Ramoshes. He'd read the Shela, and on his own, try to figure out what he thinks the answer would be. That's how he asked his own questions. He'd go through the Sugya, write it up, or in his head, or whatever he would be doing, and then he'd look at Ramosha, and Ramosha would bring some random source from a Gemara that no one else picks up on. Even though the Rishonim don't bring this, and the Acharonim don't bring this, Ramosha, when you have all Shas at the tips of your fingers, you could bring a random Shas, and the few that come to mind, Ramosha just pulled a great Gemara in Nadarim, which no one ever related to, that connects to that. So yeah, we don't have the ability to do that at our level, but this type of sugi is that sometimes they're important Gemara's Rashi, which we overlook, that the big poskim are able to pick up on. So there's no... That point you can't... To prepare sugya on the daf, I could teach you how to do that. You follow Rishon, like, look at Tosas, what he quotes, look at the Rush and look at the Riff. That gets you to these places. But these types of sugyas you can't do unless you...
We have to know Shas.
Even that won't help, necessarily. You have to be like, exactly. So those type of sugyas...
That shows the greatness of Ramosha.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't understand how it could be taiku in one place and an answer in another. The example you just gave.
Right, I understand. So the Gemara... The Gemara does that sometimes. The Gemara does do that. The Gemara does do that, yeah.
What does it mean?
It just means, again, that...
is that taiku over there?
Yeah, it is. The Gemara...
I understand.
The Gemara sometimes does that. I don't know why the Gemara does that. The Gemara will give sometimes different answers. It will paskin one thing in one Gemara and a completely opposite thing in a different Gemara. Why? I'm not sure why the Gemara does it. I don't know how it was written necessarily.
It could be a different case.
You have to figure out reasons. Sometimes the Gemara says, Rishon will say, we paskin like this Gemara and not like that Gemara.
Well, maybe you can paskin like that.
It could be Rabbi Elazar paskin for himself to where it's filling, and maybe Rabbi Shua would paskin against him, and maybe that's what the Gemara Moed cut him. It's a very good point. I don't have a good answer. Some will say that because different people wrote different Gemaras, that's more of an academic approach. Whatever the case might be, it's a very, very good point. Let's just finish off now with what I started with, which is as follows. So in the beginning, the reason why I got excited about giving this topic is because I heard a shir from Rav Asher Weiss, who said, well, it came to using chrein for Maror and Pesach. He said that all the posts can talk about, that's how the Mishnah Berurah and then the Maisa Nisim, they all say the Maisa Nisim was written by the Baal Nesivos. The Nesivos wrote a Haggadah called the Maisa Nisim, and he says as follows. He's talking about that it's Asur to crush up the Chrein. And a person who does crush up and chop up and dice up the Chrein for Pesach, he's not Yotzei his Mitzvah Maror. And he quotes another Gemara Brachos that we actually saw a number of weeks ago, that a person cooks vegetables. Remember that discussion, if you cook a vegetable, does it retain its status of Adama, or does it lose its status and just become a shackle? And we said there that whole discussion was referring to the need for matzah, having ta'am matzah. We also need the ta'am of maror. So in light of that discussion, he says, once you ruin the taste of maror, the initial taste of maror, it's no longer good for maror. Cooking maror would be a problem, and dicing it, where to lose its sharpness, would be a problem, and you wouldn't be able to eat a maror. That's how he paskins. So the footnote, one of the newer versions here, has a footnote, a number of achronim quote him, the Baal of Maisanism, this Haggadah, and argue on him, and say, no, you're allowed to chop it up. It doesn't lose its sharpness. The Mishnah Berurah refers to such a machlokas, and he talks about that's very dangerous. If you don't cut it up, it's very dangerous. To take a bite out of a chrein, that's a sakana. It's so strong, it's so potent, that's going to be very, very dangerous. So you have to chop it up.
What are we calling now, it?
Chrein.
You say bitter. Are we calling it harif or mar? Harif.
Right now, harif. We'll get to the point in a second. No. Well, both. It's really both for us, but it's too sharp. It's very dangerous to eat. Take a bite out of one of those chreins. It's very dangerous. You know, I have a decent sized chunk, and that makes me, like, my eyes burn a few guys. It's very, very strong. So the... Mishabura quotes from the Gra that a person should cut them up because it's a sakana, yeah. But you should carve them right away or do it as close as possible to the Seder so it still has its potency.
Yeah.
Because if it loses its potency, so now that's considered, it loses its mara, its taste, its bitterness. So this, even though all the Achronim say
loses
that...
Loses its harif or yeah. Loses its mar, or we're using the word the same.
Very good, very good. So this is the point. So listen to this. So Rav Asher Weiss came along and said... I heard Rav Shechter said this also, but I didn't hear this directly from him. Rav Asher Weiss said that no, he thinks dafka person should cut them up, leave the chrein exposed, so it loses its sharpness. Because you need it to be bitter, not sharp. Sharp and bitter are very different. So once the chrein loses its sharpness, you taste a drawn out chrein that loses its sharpness, it actually tastes bitter.
Yeah.
He wanted it to taste bitter because Mara is supposed to be bitter. So he goes against all the achronim. So I had a problem with that because how could you go against it? Rav Ashwai says big shoulders, fine, I don't. But all the achronim, including the Baal Nesivos, so the Mishabrua, the Gra, all come out, all of them. Talk about it, and quotes down here, the Beis Ephraim, the Shaul Meshav, the Yeshua Yaakov, tons of Achron who talk about this, whether you could cut them or you can't cut them. But either way, everyone agrees you're allowed to use it, and no one actually suggests leaving them exposed, so therefore it's clear from here that they assume sharpness and bitterness is not astira. You can have something that's bitter, even though it's sharp as well. So just because the Chrein is sharp, doesn't mean it's not also bitter. We said sharpness is not one of the four tastes. Sharpness is just simply the magnitude of how bitter it is, or how salty it might be, or how sour it might be. But it's not austere, it's still considered bitter. So that's what we're learning from this whole, the Noda the Behuda as well. We said that the olive, remember the Noda the Behuda brought a raya, whether olive is considered davar charif or not. So he brought a raya that's not davar charif, from Tosos, who says it's not bitter. So how could you bring a raya from olives not being bitter to olives not being sharp? It must be that Noda the Behuda also clearly held that davar charif and davar mar is one and the same thing. You could have something that's bitter and something that's sharp. So in light of that, I think it's clear that many, all the poskim who say that a chrein works when it's sharp, because sharpness is not considered stira to its davar mar. Okay, we'll stop here.